The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 3, The Yoga of Divine Love, continuing with Chapter 5, The Divine Personality, at the bottom of page 581. Looked at from one side, it would seem as if an impersonal thought were at work and created the fiction of the thinker for the convenience of its action, an impersonal power at work creating the fiction of the doer, an impersonal existence in operation which uses the fiction of a personal being who has a conscious personality and a personal delight. Looked at from the other side, it is the thinker who expresses himself in the thoughts which, without him, could not exist, and our general notion of thought symbolizes simply the power of the nature of the thinker. The Ishwara expresses himself by will and power and force. The existent extends himself in all the forms, integral and partial, direct, inverse, and perverse of his existence, consciousness, and bliss. And our abstract general notion of these things is only an intellectual representation of the triple power of his nature of being. All impersonality seems in its turn to become a fiction, and existence in its every movement and its every particle, nothing but the life, the consciousness, the power, the delight of the one, and yet innumerable personality, the infinite Godhead, the self-aware and self-unfolding Purusha. Both views are true, except that the idea of fiction, which is borrowed from our own intellectual processes, has to be exiled, and each must be given its proper validity. The integral seeker has to see in this light that he can reach one and the same reality on both lines, either successively or simultaneously, as if on two connected wheels traveling on parallel lines. But parallel lines which, in defiance of intellectual logic, but in obedience to their own inner truth of unity, do meet in infinity. We have to look at the divine personality from this standpoint. When we speak of personality, we mean by it at first something limited, external, and separative. And our idea of a personal God assumes the same imperfect character. Our personality is to us, at first, a separate creature, a limited mind, body, character, which we conceive of as the person we are, a fixed quantity. For although in reality it is always changing, yet there is a sufficient element of stability to give a kind of practical justification to this notion of fixedness. We conceive of God as such a person, only without body, a separate person different from all others, with a mind and character limited by certain qualities. At first, in our primitive conceptions, his deity is a thing of much inconstancy, freak and caprice, an enlarged addition of our human character. But afterwards, we conceive of the divine nature of personality as a quite fixed quantity, and we attribute to it those qualities alone which we regard as divine and ideal, while all the others are eliminated. This limitation compels us to account for all the rest by attributing them to a devil, or by lending to man an original creative capacity for all that we consider evil. Or else, when we perceive that this will not quite do, by erecting a power, which we call nature, and attributing to that all the lower quality and massive action for which we do not wish to make the divine responsible. At a higher pitch, the attribution of mind and character to God becomes less anthropomorphic, and we regard him as an infinite spirit, but still a separate person, a spirit with certain fixed divine qualities as his attributes. So are conceived the ideas of the divine personality, the personal God, which varies so much in various religions. All this may seem at first sight to be an original anthropomorphism terminating in an intellectual notion of the deity, which is very much at variance with the actualities of the world as we see it. It is not surprising that the philosophical and skeptical mind should have found little difficulty in destroying it all intellectually, whether in the direction of the denial of a personal God and the assertion of an impersonal force or becoming, or in that of an impersonal being, or an ineffable denial of existence, with all the rest as only symbols of Maya, or phenomenal truths of the time consciousness. But these are only the personifications of monotheism. Polytheistic religions, less exalted perhaps, but wider and more sensitive in their response to cosmic life, have felt that all in the cosmos has a divine origin. Therefore, they conceived of the existence of many divine personalities with a vague sense of an indefinable divine behind, whose relations with the personal gods were not very clearly conceived. And, in their more exoteric forms, these gods were crudely anthropomorphic. But where the inner sense of spiritual things became clearer, the various godheads assumed the appearance of personalities of the one divine. That is the declared point of view of the ancient Veda. This divine might be a supreme being who manifests himself in various divine personalities, or an impersonal existence which meets the human mind in these forms. Or both views might be held simultaneously without any intellectual attempt to reconcile them, since both were felt to be true to spiritual experience. If we subject these notions of the divine personality to the discrimination of the intellect, we shall be inclined to reduce them, according to our bent, to fictions of the imagination, or to psychological symbols. In any case, the response of our sensitive personality to something which is not this at all, but is purely impersonal. We may say that that is in reality the very opposite of our humanity and our personality, and therefore, in order to enter into relations with it, we are impelled to set up these human fictions and these personal symbols so as to make it nearer to us. But we have to judge by spiritual experience. And in a total spiritual experience, we shall find that these things are not fictions and symbols, but truths of divine being in their essence, however imperfect may have been our representations of them. Even our first idea of our own personality is not an absolute error, but only an incomplete and superficial view beset by many mental errors. Greater self-knowledge shows us that we are not fundamentally the particular formulation of form, powers, properties, qualities, with a conscious I identifying itself with them, which we at first appear to be. That is only a temporary fact, though still a fact, of our partial being on the surface of our active consciousness. We find within an infinite being with the potentiality of all quantities, of infinite quality, ananta guna, which can be combined in any number of possible ways, and each combination is a revelation of our being. For all this personality is the self-manifestation of a person, that is to say, of a being, who is conscious of his manifestation. But we see, too, that this being does not seem to be composed even of infinite quality, but has a status of his complex reality in which he seems to stand back from it, and to become an indefinable conscious existence. Anirdesyam. Even consciousness seems to be drawn back and leave merely a timeless pure existence. And again, even this pure self of our being seems at a certain pitch to deny its own reality, or to be a projection from a selfless, baseless, unknowable, which we may conceive of either as a nameless somewhat or as a nihil. It is when we would fix upon this exclusively and forget all that it has withdrawn into itself that we speak of pure impersonality or the void nihil as the highest truth. But a more integral vision shows us that it is the person and the personality and all that it had manifested which has thus cast itself upward into its own unexpressed absolute. And if we carry up our heart as well as our reasoning mind to the highest, we shall find that we can reach it through the absolute person as well as through an absolute impersonality. But all this self-knowledge is only the type within ourselves of the corresponding truth of the divine in his universality. There, too, we meet him in various forms of divine personality, in formulations of quality which variously express him to us in his nature, in infinite quality, the ananta guna, in the divine person who expresses himself through infinite quality, in absolute impersonality, an absolute existence, or an absolute non-existence, which is yet, all the time, the unexpressed absolute of this divine person, this conscious being who manifests himself through us and through the universe. Even on the cosmic plane, we are constantly approaching the divine on either of these sides. We may think, feel, and say that God is truth, justice, righteousness, power, love, delight, beauty. We may see him as a universal force or as a universal consciousness. But this is only the abstract way of experience. As we ourselves are not merely a number of qualities or powers or a psychological quantity, but a being, a person who so expresses his nature, so is the divine a person, a conscious being who thus expresses his nature to us. And we can adore him through different forms of this nature, a God of righteousness, a God of love and mercy, a God of peace and purity. But it is evident that there are other things in the divine nature which we have put aside, the form of personality in which we are thus worshipping him. The courage of an unflinching spiritual vision and experience can meet him also in more severe or in terrible forms. None of these are all the divinity, yet these forms of his personality are real truths of himself in which he meets us and seems to deal with us as if the rest had been put away behind him. He is each separately and all together. He is Vishnu, Krishna, Kali. He reveals himself to us in humanity as the Christ personality or the Buddha personality. When we look beyond our first exclusively concentrated vision, we see behind Vishnu all the personality of Shiva, and behind Shiva all the personality of Vishnu. He is the Ananta Guna, infinite quality, and the infinite divine personality which manifests itself through it. Again, he seems to withdraw into a pure spiritual impersonality, or beyond all idea, even of impersonal self, and to justify a spiritualized atheism or agnosticism. He becomes to the mind of man an indefinable anirdesyam. But out of this unknowable, the conscious being, the divine person, who has manifested himself here, still speaks. This too is I, even here, beyond the view of mind. I am he, the Purushottama. For beyond the divisions and contradictions of the intellect, there is another light. And there, the vision of a truth reveals itself, which we may thus try to express to ourselves intellectually. There, all is one truth of all these truths, for there each is present and justified in all the rest. In that light, our spiritual experience becomes united and integralized. No least hair's breadth of real division is left. No shade of superiority and inferiority remains between the seeking of the impersonal and the adoration of the divine personality, between the way of knowledge and the way of devotion. End of chapter 5, page 586.